I didn't want to bring this up, but I think Howard's microphone is louder than mine. So Howard and I have been communicating, not horribly effectively, over the last couple of weeks about what we're going to do when we're here. The subjects that have ended up on our list have to do with change, have to do with surrender, have to do with powerlessness. As they apply to being a journeyman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that there are 20 or 30 new people in the room, and I will try to keep some of the conversation appropriate to that, but I really want to address some of the angst and some of the problems that people have once they have established themselves well in Alcoholics Anonymous, once they have, you know, 5 years plus of sobriety. And they really, there isn't an issue about whether they know the book or know the steps, know the, you know, they're doing the deal. And yet, it still isn't okay. If I froze your life right now and said, if your life is going to be just like it is right now for the rest of your life, and say, whoa, you know, wait a minute. You know, anger, depression is epidemic, I think, in men over 50. Fear, I mean, if you're out looking for a job and you're over 50 years old, I mean, you know, it's the world's a much more dangerous place than it has been for a long time for an awful lot of us in this room. So we're going to talk about life and the things that affect men in sobriety who have been around for a while. So that's going to be the general line of conversation. Is that an accurate enough description for what you're talking about? And what Howard and I also would like is we are also going to have one or two sessions of questions and answers. So you can ask us anything you would like to ask us in those times. We're going to need a basket with pieces of paper for questions and answers. Some of what you want to attend. But could you give us some additional input about something you'd want us to address?
I have a concept.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just cannot move on. So this is the area I like to get a little feedback and explore, shed a light on.
Yeah, that's what Pema Chodron talks about, the bird in the nest that doesn't want to leave the nest. You know, goes to the bathroom in the nest, it's warm, wet, but stands on the edge of the nest. And that might come into fear would be certainly part of what I would discuss in that, and we will address that.
Okay, go ahead.
I'd like to hear about your relationship with money and what it used to be like in terms of your original financial loss and your relationship with God at that point, how it is now.
Okay.
If you collaborate about that, whether now or later.
My biggest fear in life that was that God wanted me poor and happy.
I was losing. My wife and I bought a business. We invested actually very little money and made a lot of money on it. And I was losing the business. And I had heard Bob say, every time he lost much money, it was like ripping the flesh off of his back. And I thought, I need to talk to Bob. And we did. That's when I called him and asked him, although I'd known Bob for a long time, I admired him and loved him. And we had a lot of fun picking on each other. But I wanted him to be my sponsor because he had come through this kind of thing. And it was remarkable to me the help I got from him. Just, you know, like, do you have any savings? Well, yeah. Well, do you have retirement money? Yeah. Did you ever stop and think why you were accumulating that retirement money and the savings? And why are you still working? Sell the goddamn business. It made sense. But it didn't make sense until I had him point it out to me. So it's good. That's a typical good, typical thing, is to be tied in to money rather than into making, being of service in your life. And Chuck C. talked about that a lot.
But we'll maybe we'll do a session on business and money. Excuse me?
Something in the sense of who you are, really.
I work for myself. What the hell are you talking about?
In conjunction with that, what experience did you have with whatever relationship you had with your image? Business and in Alcoholics Anonymous? And was that ever a challenge or a celebration? Or
mm-hmm. Ask that again.
The relationship with your image, as in business and as in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm.
That's a good subject, as is your.
See, Clint went through that.
Okay, I'll think about that and I'll address, maybe we'll take a third of one of my sessions and do that.
Yeah.
Jason.
I want to ask you to please talk louder because Bob can't hear anything.
Says Bob.
And Howard doesn't listen, so the combination is really horseshit.
I was wondering if you guys could talk about intimacy and vulnerability after being sober for a while, and as the walls go back up, how do you break through that in your relationships?
In your relationship or
relationship.
In life?
Yeah.
I had a couple of men who were really successful, attractive men who just broke all the ice around me with respect to vulnerability. They shared stuff with me about one of their sons was gay and issues that they had with sexuality. They were just astounding. And these guys, so I'm 6-7 years sober, these are, you know, 50-60 year old men, chairman of the board of a company. And they just blew the limits off my box. They just, you know, they literally took me by the hand and just dragged me through. I've had a couple of experiences, you know, in my life. And again, we'll re-ask that question tomorrow. And I will talk and remind me that you want me to talk about significant people who have helped me make watershed changes in my life. There was another guy back there that had his hand up. Maybe? Or did I? Yeah.
I'm right here, I'm not calling.
Okay.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about, it sounds like you both have been there. I know that the house has been there a lot long time, and Drake in your marriage. I've been in my marriage for the first 11 years, and I've been married 33 years now to the same person. But I think I've been married for 33 years, just left the same person. So I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about your relationship with your wife, long term marriage.
Okay, we'll talk about marriage.
That's good.
All right.
You know, it seemed like you had some untreated alcoholism that you broke with some six and sevens, and had a major shift in transformation. Did you have to go through that later on in sobriety? Did you have to repeat that? And was there another focal point of time that you had to do this, maybe in conjunction with the same person?
Yeah, I think the two financial collapses that I experienced were seminal. I mean, you know, when you're in danger of maybe losing everything you have, the first time I lost everything that I had, the second time I was in danger of that happening, but it wasn't as serious the second time. Pretty damn serious, but was not as major as it was in 1990. I mean, that's the nature of major crisis in life. And we create those. Okay? If you're looking at the painting on the wall, you know, of your life, you painted it. You know, and most of us say, no, I didn't paint it. That's what happened to me. I'm saying, no, you painted it. You created it. As life came through your consciousness, that is what you created with it. I'm one of seven kids. One night, we were over at the house, and we served wine to all the, my brother's alcoholic, but the rest of us aren't. And everybody got their nose into it a little bit, and we started to talk about our experience growing up. And you would not have believed, you know, with some of those very significant differences of the seven of us in that room. And the younger ones, you know, were raised differently. I mean, I left the house effectively when the younger ones were, you know, I mean, I went away to school when they were 6, 7, 8, 10 years old. And we had parents raised the last four differently. And, you know, the experience, because of our consciousness, each individual has a very different experience in the same environment, with the same people, with the same parents. And that's one of the things that, you know, that in Alcoholics Anonymous, eventually, you know, Jim Williams used to say, you know, how much of it am I responsible for? And he said, well, we always assume 100%. If it's any different than that, we will let you know. But there isn't a person in this room who has 100% of the responsibility in their story. For the lack of success that most of us have, our fundamental story, if you have an hour and a half, I'd like to tell you my story, is how I've been kind of screwed and mistreated, and how I've had some bad breaks, and if just that last deal would have worked. I mean, I've got a story, and a lot of us trade the story for our lives. And one of the great crises, and one of the fundamental to me definitions of humility, is to be able to stand naked in front of your life the way it really is. And most of us are really reluctant to give our story up. We'd rather have the story than the breakthrough. It is, as long as I have a good explanation for why my life doesn't work, then I don't have to put myself out there. I used to People used to say, God, Bob's really bright. God, if he ever went to school, I'd like people assuming that I was bright, and that by going to school one day a week, I was still able to do what some people did, rather than take the chance of doing all the work and maybe not being what they thought I was, or I thought they thought I was. It's just amazing how our stories of ourselves, the image that that gentleman was talking about before, hold us back, and we're in love with that story. And for most of us, to have the full measure of life, you have to abandon your story.
Jamie, I'm an alcoholic.
What the hell do you want?
Yeah, I'd like to
hear, you know, some talk about, like, fear, I mean, first of all, I want to say thank you for bringing it up, because it's true, I think a lot of people, well, I'll speak for myself, are sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous with a couple decades sober, you know, having to walk around acting like everything's going okay, you know, and inside, you know, feeling like we're dying, and having a hard time talking about that in Alcoholics Anonymous in our community, because I feel an obligation to carry a message, so therefore I can't really let people know that I'm hurting. And, you know, when I heard about this retreat, I actually looked up one of your talks, and one of the first things over the internet, one of the first things that I heard was somebody who could just be honest and vulnerable in front of a group of men and talk about what was really going on. And, you know, I still struggle deeply with fear, so I'd just like to hear how, you know, once that got brought up for you, how you pushed through some of that, or continue to push through some of that.
That's going to be the fundamental conversation we're going to be having. That literally, you've just described the conversation I hope that we're going to have this weekend. Does that sound like a conversation worth having? Could I have a show?
I don't know how to measure that. But anyway, those of you that were here last year, do you remember me talking at all about brain chemistry for alcoholics?
Yes.
That were spring-loaded biochemically for fight or flight. We're like the caveman. You know, the caveman survived because he had a brain chemistry that in that environment made him successful, and he could survive. And when he survives, he passes those genes on to the next generation. And we end up with them. And we're in the top 10% in terms of the neurotransmitters that activate the fight or flight center. So we're afraid just because of that. I mean, that's the basis for the fear, the chemical basis for the fear. And for the anger. And we're in the bottom 50% in terms of the neurotransmitters that activate the pleasure center. So when you fight to win in order to feel good, you're shoveling sand or whatever you shovel against the tide. So when you say we're afraid, yes, you know. And to me, it is remarkable that that fear is there because of neural network, because of brain circuits, which if you stop using them, you lose them. That's a fact. If you fire them, you wire them. And the steps do that.
The steps change, alter our behavior where we're...
where we're building new...
new pathways.
New pathways.
That's one of the... you know, one of the major schools of psychology today that, you know, I forget what the hell it's called, but that, you know, new neural pathways. You know, if you can get a person, you know, taking a different, over a period, it only takes about a month or so of doing that, and then that becomes, you know, where you go with something rather than our jump shot, which we've had since third grade, you know. So.
You know, part of the transformation is in the tattletale up here at the corner of Sepulveda and Sawtelle. The tattletale was recently rated in a restaurant guide as one of the top 8 dive bars in all Los Angeles County. Clancy wrote me an email and said, I tried to make an icon out of that nut house in Texas, and as far as I know, it's never got any kind of an award. Look what you've done for the tattletale. But in the tattletale, we were deep thinkers. Nothing is as easy as it looks. If something can go wrong, it will go wrong, and at the worst possible time. My God, that's life, you know. Life sucks, and then you die. And you go to that meeting at 6 o'clock in the morning and after work and sometimes during work, and you're in there and that's your meeting, okay? Stop going in there and start going to AA meeting and listen to the different thought patterns that you get started just from going to meetings. That all of this is the stuff that transforms it.
But along with that, you know, so if I drew a circle, and so in the circle is everything there is to know. Take a slice of the pie, that's what you know. Take another slice of the pie, that's what you don't know. The rest of the pie is what you don't know and don't know you don't know. 90% of what makes a significant difference for most of us in the program comes from what we didn't know and didn't know we didn't know it. One of the other great lines I've heard was, see it or be it. When you don't see your alcoholism, you are it. When you don't see your anger, you are it. When you see it, you have an opportunity to engage and manage the process. So see it or be it. And our egos often do not allow us to see it. We just go back to our story. You know, we go back to the same place, the same explanation. And that is what inventory, but you have to, nothing will change until you have an alteration in consciousness. So, you know, why did I not work? I mean, I needed an alteration in consciousness. I can't explain that. It's stupid. It was goofy. It's wrong. I was, you know, I didn't, it wasn't a lack of ability. I lay it more at fear than anything else. But I needed an alteration in consciousness. And once I had that, my life turned on a dime. To have that, I had to have a surrender experience. Yep.
I lived with like 20 some odd people, and it's kind of hard not to conquer resentment. And so I guess I'd like to hear about like resentments and being able to deal with your end of it.
Repeat what he.
What?
What did they? What's the issue?
He's living with 26 other people, and it's pretty hard to copper resentment. You know, that's not going to be a perpetual situation. I mean, living in a sober house or what? Sharing a bathroom with 24 people. I mean, it's.
But you still copper resentment throughout the day, so I just like learn how to deal with your end of it a little bit more.
Yeah, but you would not have ended up in that sober house if you weren't an asshole. I'm sorry to be direct, but I just want to state the obvious. It is, and you. There's probably nothing more important than you being where you are, doing what you're doing. You have an opportunity. If you look around this room and listen to what's going on in the room, there are some extraordinary men in this room. And you have an opportunity to stop being an asshole. That's not a small deal. If you don't change what you're doing and how you're doing it, you're going to have a rough road. And you're in a, you know, you now have a starter kit. It's, you know, and it's like boot camp. And it is not fun, and it is not easy. But if you focus on what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous and stop picking the mouse shit out of the cereal and focus on that, it's where your attention, what you fill yourself full of. I mean, the playground mentality about he said this, he did this, you know, son of a bitch never washes the dishes, the sinks, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, you fill yourself full of that, and it will, it's just a significant distraction. You only have one thing to focus on. I mean, it's wax on, wax off. That's all you have to do is wax on, wax off. And if you learn those two moves, you know, we'll be here next year, and if you're here next year, you'll have, how much sobriety do you have now?
9 months.
Excuse me, sir?
9 months.
9 months. You come here next year with, you know, 23 months of, or whatever the hell the number is. I'm a numbers guy, but I'm old.
We got that.
It'll be different. You will not have that. If you don't let the chicken shit stuff detract you from the amazing journey that you're on. It is, I mean, you are on track to literally alter the direction of your life. And it's the same thing with, you know, school and boot camp and all those sorts of things. Just get through it. And I'm really glad you are where you are doing what you're doing. It's the kid who's going to be here tomorrow, I don't think treatment touched him much. But the 3 or 4 months that he spent in a sober house with a group of men starting their lives over had a very significant impact on his life.
Sometimes my home group had a beginner's meeting, which is mostly attended by people from sober houses. Boys and women in the women's sober house, and the men would come to our home group meeting. And Bob and Linda, his wife, went to this meeting with my wife and I. And some of the girls there were very colorful, whose language was right out of the tattletale. And one of them, when she left the sober house, okay, she had been in treatment for months. And when she left treatment, she came to the sober house. And she had the 26 people that she lived with. But anyway, she's in Denver now. And she's got a new business started that is successful in produce for grocery stores. And she's the speaker seeker for a meeting that I was invited to come and speak at. She is just a dynamite lady. And we see a lot of those people. I mean, come out of the sober houses into AA and then into life in ways that you can't do by coming out of the tattletale. You got to go through this, and it's a learning experience. The whole universe is a learning experience. And you might as well be dealing with 26 men as the 26 problems you had before you got into that sober house, because you had more than 26 you had to work with then. And this is just a higher level of problems. That's kind of the way it goes for a long time. You know, as you grow, you get a higher level of problem.
Okay, we're going to...
Jeff, Bob, I'm grateful that you're back with us. In your talk, you reference some authors like Brene Brown and Get the Beam and Perfect. And I would hope and like that you would continue to pepper...
Yeah, remind me about books that I would recommend.
Richard Rohr.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I read a lot of Rohr.
Yeah.
So does Howard.
But I didn't know either of them before hearing it or being here.
Yeah.
My question, though, is related to spiritual guides.
Spiritual guidance?
Spiritual guides, guidance. I think I remember you saying that you had a spiritual sponsor or
spiritual director.
Yeah, I'm curious about that and how one goes about finding all of that related to spirituality.
Yeah. There are places like this whose mission and work is spiritual direction. And if you would look that up, we have one in St. Paul that... and some of them are lay people, and some of them are... my spiritual director died about the time my sponsor died. It was a wonderful year. My spiritual director of 30 years and my sponsor of 43 years died. I got a new spiritual director, and that I have not maintained that relationship. I have failed to maintain the relationship. and I'm debating whether or not I should go back with them. But I'll talk to you. Grab me for 5 or 10 minutes. But that is something that the specific conversation you're having with that person is different than you'd have with a sponsor. Now, the man who I am not using is in the program, Al-Anon, and he's a very insightful guy. He gives retreats all over the world for a long time, but I just still mourn the loss of my guy. And when my sponsor was in his 90s, that man was probably more in some real ways my sponsor. But the conversations I had with that man were about life. The conversations we had were not directly step related. They were, you know, we have a men's group that has met for 30 some years. We meet every other week, twice a month, and we study books, and we've had monks come in, we've had Muslims come in, we've had, you know, we do two retreats a year, and it's a group of people, most of whom are in the program, but not all. It's not an AA meeting. The purpose is to promote our spiritual quest. The group is called Quest, and it's to promote. And so you end up in a year reading 6 or 7 books that you would probably not have read on your own. And your job, you know, every 6 weeks or whatever the hell it is to take 2 or 3 chapters of that book, start the conversation, and then we go around the room and do that. And that's been a great help in my life. Very well attended. There's only about 14 of us, and people have been very faithful to that process. All right, you've got... Okay.
Remind us to talk more about that tomorrow, about moral and spiritual convictions galore. We have no shortage of them. But when it comes to practice them, the necessary power isn't there. But I think it isn't there because of a biased brain chemistry that's for fight or flight. And the way we get the power to practice those is not looking for power to practice them, but doing the steps to change. And those things happen as a consequence of doing the step.
And also, I want to talk about, this will sound heretical, I think that we go back to the steps sometimes almost too often and sometimes mechanically with the same words, with the same familiarity, and they're dry. They just, you know I should do another 4-step, but I know if God could and would if he were sought. One of the great questions in life is, how much time have you spent seeking God? Not going to meetings, not reading the book. How much time have you spent seeking God? And there are books that literally will help transform your consciousness. And what I do with all these different books, from the Buddhist tradition to the, you know, is I drag them back into my AA cave. I recontextualize them, but I do an enormous, or not an enormous, I have a broad brush of things, and then remind me also to show, I read 15 meditation books in the morning. I'm old and I don't work, so I can, but I mean, I want to tell you why I do that and what the experience of it is. So we'll see. See you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. If not the meditation meeting, we'll see you at breakfast.